Yeah, hello everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is March the 27th, 2014. So, yeah, I really appreciate all of you being on the call, and today we're going to be talking about coaching younger athletes and how we can use the Performing Edge coaching techniques and sports psychology and mental training to, you know, to help athletes who are younger to perform their best. And the main reason for these calls, of course, is to answer your questions. So that always takes priority. If you have questions, you can always call or email me ahead of time to send in questions, or you could ask questions live on the call right here. So so that's great. And I know, Alex, you sent one, a question, so we can go to that. And also, just does anyone have any updates or success stories or any progress that you'd like to report, things that you're doing with athletes? You can just jump in, anything that you want to share. If there's anybody that has something in particular, you can always jump in to share that, and we can do some of that at the end too. So it's always good for everyone to hear that you're all active, you know, working with athletes. So let's see, Alex, first you ask a question about a girl softball player, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to just ask your question so everyone can hear?
Sure. Of course. Yeah. So this is a softball player who has a pitcher actually. She came to me and referred by the coach, and the coach tells me that the pitcher had a very good game, the first game out. This is the beginning of the season for them, so she pitched a very good first game. And somehow the second game she was completely emotionally unable to perform. She needed to be pulled out, I think, in the first or second inning. Ever since then, she pitched another game or so, and she was equally emotionally unable to perform. So partly what the coach had told me is that there's a prior history that this pitcher was hit on the face by a drive on the ball. So we think that, well, maybe that has something to do with this, although I was kind of a little bit puzzled by this, because she pitched well the first game but not the second one. So, anyways, when I met the pitcher, what she told me was that when she was about to go and pitch for the second game, right before the pitching coach came up to her and gave her some technical skills in order to improve her pitching. So when she went out to pitch, she was more kind of thinking about the pitching motion, the changes that she was just told to do. And I think that most likely derailed her concentration and ability to stay in the flow of just throwing and relying on her pitching motion that she's been doing for many, many, many years. So I think that led probably to a lack of to pitching poorly, and then affecting her self-esteem, and so now that she's coming to address this. So this is what I just found out. So my question that I asked, I wrote to Dr. Joanne, was how do I deal with this in regards to addressing this particular issue to the coach? It's an issue of, I guess, confidentiality. It's an issue of how do I, I need to talk to the athlete, if that's okay with her, I guess, that's my hunch. Second one is, how do I address this particular issue with a main coach? Should I talk to the pitching coach as well? So anyways, it's a dilemma that I don't usually encounter in my normal psychotherapeutic practice, but I want to raise this issue about how do I bring all these different pieces of this equation and create a teamwork effort. I don't want to piss anybody off. So anyways, that was the question to Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, that's a great question and a great situation, because a lot of times, yeah, we're dealing with multiple factors and different people come into the picture, not just the athlete. So it's a little less complicated if you're just working with the athlete. Mm-hmm. So you're just working with this one athlete, the pitcher, or are you working with the whole team?
Just the pitcher.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and what kind do you have a relationship with the coaches at all? Or
yeah,
do you know
the coach, I know her quite well. No, we get along fairly well. I never met the pitching coach there, however.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who he or she is. I have no idea.
Okay. So the pitching coach was the one that came out and gave the instructions?
That's right. That's right, yes.
Messed up the coach, the girl.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of a delicate issue because, like you say, you don't want to piss people off and you want to build a good relationship with the coaches and all. And I guess the other question is to ask find out what with your pitcher, the girl, what kind of relationship does she have with the coaches? Does she like them? Does she find them helpful, or is it kind of a hostile thing? Relationship?
Oh, between the player.
Are you there?
Yeah. So between the player and the coaches.
Yeah, I just wondered, does the pitcher like the coaches?
Okay.
Or
I see.
She does?
I don't know. It's a good question. I think she does, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Quite.
Okay. Sometimes pitcher. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing to find out from your athletes that you're working with. How do they get along with their coaches? Sometimes they're great. They think they're fantastic. Sometimes they're really having a problem with their coach, and that's why they're coming to you.
Okay.
To kind of help with that situation and learn how to work with the coach that they can't stand sort of thing, or and sometimes the coach is too overbearing, and because that's a lot of what goes on is with athletes is the athlete coach relationship is really an important one because they're working together all the time. But they sometimes if the coach is overbearing and the athlete doesn't need that, there's a more of a difficult relationship there. So you could ask her that too. I guess it just depends on, first of all, your first obligation would be to the athlete, to, your client. And I think to keep, as you say, confidentiality there. Some athletes don't want, you to know that they're working, don't want anyone else to know that they're working with a mental training coach or a sports psychology coach, that they feel that there might be a little bit of a stigma attached there to it, and they don't want others to know about that. And so it's important to find that out. If that's the case, then you should keep, I would say, keep keep your relationship confidential just between you and the athlete. Because if you were to go straight to the coach and talk to them and the athlete didn't want you to do that or didn't want anyone to know she was seeing, a sports psychology coach, and then, the athlete might get really upset, and as you say, you're sort of breaking confidentiality. So, so have you asked the athlete that if she wants to just keep it confidential?
This is why I'm reaching out to you, because I did not ask this question to her, and I want to run this idea or this scenario by you first, and so I appreciate this idea. So what I'll do next time is I will try to assess whether she wants me to talk with the coach or how or when or if or alone, together, all those things.
I think that'd be a good idea. And so that would be the first question, is to always, just focus just on the athlete and her needs and work with trying to just – get into that right brain kind of mentality, the flow of her pitching and all, and as opposed to just the technical part. Because as you say, that's probably exactly what happened when pitching coach came up and gave her some technical help, then she, so you know, she's probably trying to change something with her pitching, which is something, you know, you probably should do during a practice, not during a game.
That's right. Yeah.
Then you know, then you got a chance to, the brain has a chance to incorporate it and, you know, practice it in a low stress
mm-hmm.
situation, and then you got a much better chance of solely making changes. But
yeah,
to try to make a, it might have been a, like a major change or trying something new that she hadn't tried before, and if you know she's in a real tense situation, yeah, it's as you say, like a setup for, you know, not being able to do well. So I think at this point I would just stay, you know, talk to the athlete and see how she feels about what her relationship is with her coach and the pitching coach, and try to just, you know, there's that that chapter in my book called Losing and Learning, and that would be a good chapter to go over to say sometimes you have problems with other sometimes there's stuff that goes wrong, and that's the best time to learn, and to be able to, if she is having emotional issues, you know, without getting too upset, then that would be a good thing to focus on. You know, imagine, you could do some visualizations with her, imagine that you, you know, something goes wrong in the game, and you start to feel angry or frustrated. And then see, if, and then try to imagine yourself turning that around and taking a few mm-hmm. deep breaths and telling yourself, "Hey, I can do this. This is okay. That was just one pitch. Just let it go." And imagine yourself recovering quickly from a bad pitch or a bad situation, and coming back and see, and then going back to her peak performance. Imagine a time, you know, tell me about a time when you were really, you know, at your best, and see yourself going back to that time when you're at your best. So I would do it that way first, you know, just work with the athletes themselves, and because she may not want anyone to know that she's, you know, seeking outside help here. And then if she does want you to talk to the coach, then it might be best to, if it's possible, to have like a three-way meeting, you know, with her and the coach or the pitching coach and you, you know, by phone or by, you know, out in the field.
Yeah.
So that's an idea where, you know, it's the three of you have input kind of thing, where it's not just you trying to rescue the athlete by talking to the coach. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, also I'm trying to think of... because I know the coach, not the pitching coach. But I'm also thinking of the sensitivity of this issue, and not to go behind the pitching coach's back. So,
yeah, since there's two coaches involved.
That's right. And I know one of them, but I know the second one. And the second one is one that messed up the athlete.
The second pitching coach.
I know the head coach. Quite well. I don't know the pitching coach.
So it gets a little complicated. If there was just one coach, it might be easier to, you know,
right.
have a three-way meeting kind of thing.
That's right.
But it, yeah,
it's a four-way meeting.
Huh?
It sounds to me like it's going to be a four-way meeting.
Four-way, yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you had that, that would be better than having the three-way. Then you're leaving one person out, kind of thing. So. Is she paying you, or is it volunteer?
No, it's voluntary.
Okay, well, that's good, so you wouldn't lose income from it if it doesn't work out. So,
I can really mess it up, I don't care.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I just want to mention, this is totally off the topic, but I'm in Santa Barbara right now on my vacation. So even though I'm taking my vacation, you guys are really important to me, so I made sure I got on our call here. And looking out over the ocean right now, and there's just this whole school of like 12 dolphins going by.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Oh, I get to watch dolphins. Oh, my gosh, they're out there just feeding and stuff and jumping in the water. So I get to watch dolphins while I'm working with you guys.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, pretty neat. Yeah, it's life is good. So Yeah, but it is a delicate kind of situation. And I'd say when in doubt, only work with the athlete. To keep it simpler, because sometimes you can get in more of a complicated situation if you've got too many people involved, like you say, the two coaches and the athletes and all. If you were working with the whole team, then I'd say, yeah, maybe it'd be good to have a team meeting, kind of thing, or you'd be working with coaches and the athletes all together. Then that would be good to do. But in this case, it might be best just to work with the athlete herself, but it's frustrating because you don't want the pitching coach to come in and do that kind of thing, mess up the athlete. But you can teach the athlete to tune out whatever, just to tune in what is relevant and tune out those things that are not relevant. I think, and if a pitching coach does come in and try to say things, she can, just try to focus, stay right brain, I'd say, and just tell her to just stay, try to keep in a flow and keep with what she knows and keep with the fundamentals in the game itself. You want to just execute what you already know and do your deep breathing and visualize the ball going over in the strike zone and all of those things, and not too much on the technical aspect, because it's really difficult to change during the heat of a game.
That's right.
I think. Does anyone else have comments on this or ideas for Alex?
Joanne, it's Amy. I actually had a similar situation. I had a senior in high school come to me last year. She was a pitcher. And her dad called me and said that he was really upset because she was having such difficulty with her nerves every time she got up to pitch. And the coach was the one who, realized it and said, hey, look, I don't want to put you in a situation if you're uncomfortable. And she was clearly uncomfortable. So there was an awareness about it. The coach was being nice about it and saying, I'm not going to put you there if you don't want to be there and you don't feel comfortable. So they came to me, and I started working with her. And she would actually go from my house to her pitching coach lesson at one of the colleges. And we started working things, and, just as you were saying, I was suggesting, well, let's get you in the right part of your brain and just feel it, stop overthinking, all the technical things. And it really did help her. And then what would happen is when she went to see the pitching coach right after me, the pitching coach was reinforcing her, saying, I can tell your body language is so much more relaxed. And then that gave her confidence, and then she could pitch again. So I think everybody has the potential to work well together, as long as there's an understanding and awareness of, okay, she's struggling with this. How can we help her? And then, Alex, if you work with her and then the pitching coach can kind of say, hey, I see a change in you. Your body's more relaxed. You're doing great. This kid really turned herself around. I worked with her for about 3 sessions, and then she was doing much better. But it was a very similar situation.
Yeah. So thanks, Amy. Yeah, that's a good kind of thing. If you can just reinforce the things that the athlete's doing well and help them to relax and that sort of thing, that would be better. Alex, if you're interested in working with first I'd say, ask the athlete, does she like the coach and the pitching coach, and how are they getting along? And if it seems to be an overall good situation, then ask if you can, if you might have a chat with a 4-way chat sort of thing, with all the coaches.
Okay.
and try to make it rather than pointing fingers, blame at who caused the problem, ask how can we help and how.
More educational.
Yeah, an educational type of thing, help the pitcher be more relaxed, and have the pitcher the girl talk first about what she feels like the problem is or what she needs help with, you know, and then just kind of get people's input and feedback about how they can help, and then you could give your perspective on the how important the mental part of training
sure.
is, and how it's
sure.
important to be relaxed, and it's helpful not to think so much about the technical aspects
yeah.
during the game, but maybe just think of a cue. You know, think of is there some quick cue that the pitcher could give herself, like saying the word focused or relaxed or strike zone, you know, getting the ball in the strike zone, some quick little word that she could use to symbolize giving, you know, doing a really good pitch, something like that.
I wonder,
so,
just asking, wondering, Greg, if you have any experiences, because you work with teams. I'm curious if you have any similar experience in your...
Hey, Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I am. In working with teams, I'm trying to define your question a little clearer, to where... you mean in this specific example, to where a coach... You have two coaches to where one might give instruction that the other one isn't aware of, and then you have to bridge that gap, if you will. I mean, that certainly exists. And in fact, in the soccer team that I'm working with, there's a similar example as to, not exactly the same, but they had one of the coaches, the assistant coaches, was privy to information about a disciplinary violation that one player had incurred and didn't share it with the head coach. But, of course, it eventually became found out and became a real issue. So I think the real point, and one of the points that you're talking about in your situation, is communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has to be on the same page, and if a pitching coach is giving instruction, the head coach should be aware of that, and I think would be open to that conversation, to where, you know, that you could initiate in regards to getting everybody together in a four-way conversation as to, here's what I think is going on, you know, what does everybody else think? So it's, I guess my point is, yeah, the open communication is extremely important in a team situation, especially when you have multiple coaches,
mm-hmm.
because there again, everyone has to be on the same page and aware of any situations that might be holding back an individual player, which of course affects the whole team. So
okay.
That'd be my two
yeah.
cents, I guess.
All right, great. Well, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that everybody has to be on the same page and try to get people on the same page. And you're dealing with lots of different personalities and that sort of thing, too. And sometimes the coaches, coach tends to be more controlling and wants to
right.
be the person in charge. So if you can make them feel like they're like everybody has you know, that their ideas are important and that they have everyone has a contribution, that could be really helpful. So yeah, Michelle, did you have any comments or thoughts from Bali? Oh, I don't know if she's still on the call. She probably might be on mute or something. But yeah, that's okay. So yeah, that's fantastic, Alex. And yeah, you give us an update. You know,
sure,
when you
yeah.
Know what's happening
okay.
there. When you get more, yeah, make some more progress.
Okay.
So yeah, I wanted to share with you the some ideas with regard to working with younger athletes, and share with you a case study that I was doing. It happens to be in the area of baseball as well, but the same principles apply to every sport. I think, you know, first of all, you know, how you may want to know how to attract young athletes to your coaching practice, and I think it's one of the most lucrative areas with regard to sports psychology coaching that I've found. Adults to work with are great, but kids, what I found is that parents are very invested in their kids' success and happiness, and so they're willing to pay for your services much more than, say, an adult will pay for themselves to help themselves. Coaches, our parents are very willing to, pay for something that they feel will help them. Oftentimes their kid is driving them crazy at home because they are not happy, or they're not, they're doing great in practice, but they're not, so they freeze up when it comes to the game or the race. And so they're looking for a solution to a problem. So if you can think of it, it's not just education or not just giving them information, but you're actually, providing a solution to a major problem or multiple solutions to lots of problems, and that those solutions you provide in sports can be also, really helpful to them in life, to every aspect of their life, to helping them in school and with peer relationships and in work now or future work positions. So all that is really helpful for them. So it's an area that I encourage you to get involved in if you want. And of course, you've got all the institutions you can work with, high schools, colleges, or there's club teams, private club. If an athlete is really doing well in their sport, like with volleyball or baseball, they'll often have their high school team, and then they also play with their club team, private club team, which is something separate that the parents are paying for the kids to go to a higher level of team for coaching. And often parents, high school kids and parents, are very interested in their kids, getting into a good college, and sports is often a means for doing that. So they are, really highly motivated to help their child to do well in sports, not only just for the sport itself, but because it's a means to them getting a really good education in the future, and hopefully getting a scholarship or partial scholarship to a university as well, which can be, is more and more expensive these days for parents. So they're really, interested in a way that they could afford to pay for their kids to go to college. So they consider an investment in you and your coaching services as a really good way to help them, the kid with their child, with their confidence so that they can go do well in sports and then get noticed by the scouts or noticed by those people that are recruiters for colleges. Often, so then it makes the child's job much easier. They don't have to go hunting for a college. They're actually getting recruited by the coaches of top colleges because they see them playing in games and that sort of thing. So that's but then that can create whole process itself can create a stressor for kids that they have a problem that they aren't performing as well as they'd like, and they know that all these scouts are looking at them at colleges or in high school toward going to college, and so that creates performance anxiety in the kids. And so that's something you can work with as well. It creates more work for you, good work to be able to help them handle the pressure that comes with, scouts looking for them for performance and to go to college. So, so that's a really good area to that's needed, where your work is really needed as well. So, some ways to attract young athletes is, of course, on your website. If you have that on the homepage, and on, you could put, list that as keywords and as a headline, and in your descriptions there as putting high school athletes, college athletes, using those words, so that when parents are searching on on Google and the search engines, they'll find your page more likely, and if you're just developing your website, you know, using WordPress is the best way. We'll go through more of that technical stuff in another call, but go to WordPress.org, not WordPress.com, but WordPress.org it's a free platform for setting up your website, and that way when you put in those words, keywords like high school athletes and college athletes, elite athletes, or put in the different sports you want to work with, you know, baseball, softball, volleyball, whatever, swimming, whatever sport it is, then that will come up in the search engines when sports parents are looking. Even that word sports parents is a good one to put on your website as well, because they're the ones, usually it's the parents that are looking first for your services for kids. For their kids.
To write what? I'm sorry, Dr. Tran, sports parents?
Yeah, just the term sports parents. I mean, they're parents, obviously, but they're, you know, that's a newer term that people use a lot these days, sports parents. I mean, it's kind of like a soccer mom. You know, sports parents are parents that are, you know, just parenting kids that are doing sports. So just using that term, sports parents, they think of themselves as a sport parent, meaning that they've got kids who are into sports, and sometimes the parents are even, they're not only parenting their kid who's in an athlete, but they're also a coach too, and that's even sometimes that's a good thing, can be even better because the parent knows the sport even better. So that's the situation with the case study that I wanted to present to you too. That I'll talk about in just a moment. You can also work in terms of clients, you know, for you, you can work with the kids. You could also work with the coaches, you know, the athletic coaches, and have them be your clients. Sometimes they'll come to you. Like I had one recently, it was a woman that just called from a university cross-country coach and just wanted me to make a visualization MP3 for her entire team. So up in Oregon, and so it was Washington State, and so I did that. I just did a consultation with her about what problems her team was having and what they needed, and we just charged for a regular session like I would with a client, a student. But I worked with the coach herself, and then made a custom MP3 audio for the coach so that she could share that with the whole team. For their upcoming competition. So that's another way that you can work with kids is through the coaches and actually coach the coach. And you want to be able to complement what they are already doing, you know, using your skills to complement, find out what's working already and then what's what needs help. And they're busy oftentimes, the coach working on the physical part of training, so you could complement what they're doing by working on the mental part of training. And then, and you can use Olympic athletes as, in selling your services, you can use Olympic athletes as an example that, most Olympic athletes and professional athletes, they don't just work with one coach. They often have their regular overall coach, and then they've got a strength and conditioning coach, and say if it's a batter, they've got a batting coach, they also often have a performance coach as well that can be you to work with the mental part to put it all together, because they can have like this one group of parents were calling me and saying they're putting all this money into paying for private coaches for their child for his baseball, but you know he's not putting it together. It's not working, and they felt like the mental side was a missing component. So they hired me as their performance coach, performing edge coach, to be able to put it all together for them, so that the child could really be in the right mindset to be able to incorporate all that other coaching that he's getting. So, and if you can let them know that you are a specialist in the mental training aspect and you have a much better idea of what they should be doing there. And then, for instance, you can find out what the coach wants the athlete to do. Like, let's say a track and field runner, the coach wants the child to run at a certain pace, go out at a certain pace, and be able to keep this certain pace during a you know, 1 mile race. And kids typically always go out too fast is the problem. They go out really fast in the first lap, and then they lose it in the later on, and they just run out of energy. So you could help by finding out what the pace the coach wants them to run, and then have them visualize that it feels a little too easy at the beginning, but then it's going to feel a lot harder at the end, that same pace. So, and then just some of the things that I wanted to mention with sort of do's and don'ts with kids in particular. Kids tend to have, a shorter attention span than adults do, and so sometimes you want to make the sessions a little shorter or make them more fun in some ways, engage the child, make it a game. Make kids have, a little less attention span, but the good part is that they often at times have a better imagination than adults. I mean, they're imagining things all the time in their mind, so why not use that to enhance their training? They'll come up with ideas you hadn't even thought of to visualize. This one child I've been working with the baseball, I said, what do you want to be visualizing? He said, when I'm pitching, I want to visualize that I'm the ball going toward the strike zone, and that I'm just going right, I'm hurling along at a really fast pace, and I'm going right through the strike zone, and that the batter's, missing it. I never even thought of that before. Visualize that you're the ball. But the kids thought of that because, they're a child's mind sometimes is really creative. So I'd say, ask the children, your kids lots of questions because they can really give you some great answers, and they're thinking of picturing things. They're natural visualizers. So use their creativity, and they can come up with ideas for you that, are brand new. I ask him what do you visualize when you're the batter, and he says, well, I want to visualize that I'm the bat, and that the ball's coming in and it's hitting right in the center there, right in that sweet spot, and that I'm connecting with the ball and just going for it. Does that kind of make sense, everybody?
Yeah. How old are these kids you're referring to?
How old?
Yeah.
It could be any kids that. That you can work with kids, of course, of any age. But what I was thinking of was the kid I was working with is 10 years old, and so let me tell you about the case study that I wanted to share. Yeah, he's 10 years old, and the parents. Oh, and the child is, the interesting thing, too, is that some kids have ADD, attention deficit disorder. Mm-hmm. This kid has that as well as attention hyperactivity attention disorder. So he has both the mental component that his mind is going racing too fast, and also hyperactivity that his body motor system is going too fast, and he tends to fidget a lot. And so that sort of thing is something to be aware of, to ask the parents if the child has that. So what happened was I first got an email. Often you'll get an email first from the parents. If it's a child, you'll get an email from the children. It's usually from the parents, and that's better anyway because I think the parents are going to be the ones that know a lot about the child, and that they're the ones that are paying you. And so that's a good thing to connect with the parents first. So I got an email from the mother saying, I have a 10-year-old son who does fantastic in practice with his batting, but he freezes up in the games, and he is overthinking it, the games, and wondering if you can help. And so I emailed back, and just I have a standard email that I send back, but then I personalize it with the paragraph first, a couple sentences responding to exactly what they said in their email. So, yeah, I'll send you that this time or put it in the website, too, and I'll put it at the end of my next email to you, just my standard email that I send out to people so that you can take a look at that. And then you could customize it for yourself, too, and just put in, you might want to have something like that, a standard one that you send so you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel to do it each time. But yet you want to make sure that the first few sentences is customized for them. So I'd say, hi, Marilyn, or whoever the parent is, yeah, thanks for your email about your 10-year-old son and his baseball. And if you have worked with kids like that, then you want to say that right away. I've worked with many 10-year-old baseball kids, and I'm confident that I can help you with that. I work with that kind of situation all the time, and there is a solution. And you want to reassure them that you have solutions to their problems. So saying that I'm confident I can work with you, and I have a few tips for you. You might say that to get their curiosity, and say and then put in right away the times that you have to talk on the phone. So, for instance, I had that morning a couple hours free there, and I said I happen to be free right now for the next couple hours, and I'm free at these times. If you would like to give me a call, we can chat about how I could be of help to your son. And also if you could give me your phone number just in case so I can call you back. So I did that, sent the email, and within 5 minutes after sending the email, the father called me back. So I got an email from the mother first, and then she got the email back and talked to the father, and then he called me right back. So it was really a great response. It showed that they were highly motivated. And then the father called back and told me more about the situation that the son, and that he is actually a coach, too. So that's a really good situation to work with if one of the parents is a father and one of the coaches on the team. They're usually volunteer coaches. But, a lot of times if the father, let's say, knows the sport, like he was a good baseball player himself and he really knows the sport, then he's, can be a good coach for the child. But, but being aware, a lot of parents know that they can tell their child something, but because they're the father or the parents, the kids, sometimes doesn't listen or turns them off or doesn't go... they sometimes, as the child grows older, sometimes there's a lack of respect for parents. Just it comes naturally with being a teenager. Later on, that's the case, and so parents get frustrated that they can't, get through to the child. So that's why they're coming to you, as an outside person, as a professional, to help them with that. So, so the father called right back and said, "Yeah, I've got the son. He's got 146 IQ, which is like off the scale. It's about 99th percentile. So he's really smart, but has is really not focused with the problem with the ADD and the ADHD. So he's got his brain is working at 10." Overtime, overthinking things, and he's got a great ability. He's got great skills as a, as a batter and as a pitcher. But and he's great in practice. But then when the game comes, he overthinks it. Things. So I said, yeah, I definitely can help with that, and let's set up a time. And he said, can you come in tomorrow? Or can we start tomorrow, the next day? So I said, sure. And so they came in, and the father came in and the son. And normally, I think it's good, with younger kids like that, it is good to, if they're local in the area, to you see them in your office there. I just have an office right in my house. So it's just a designated office there that's, very professional. And so I just see people right there. So just if you're looking to, see, if you have an outside office, great. But you don't have to have that extra expense. You can, easily do it right in your own home there as long as it's quiet and all. Can everyone hear me okay still?
Yep.
Just checking in if the sound is okay. Okay. Okay, great. Yeah. So So I would encourage you, if it's a younger child, like 10 years old, and especially if they have something like ADD or ADHD hyperactivity, then you know, it's better to see them in your office, because they'll tend to get too, and the parents knew this, they'd get too distracted if they're talking on the phone. But I have, you know, I had another a 10-year-old baseball kid that I worked with that was in Fresno, 4 hours away, so it was too far away for him. And but he did not have the ADD problem. And he was able to, we did a lot of great sessions on the phone. He was able to concentrate just fine. So it can work well on the phone or in your office. But in this case, they came in, and and the child was obviously really smart, and but he's aware that he overthinks things in the game. His mind is going too fast. And I said, "Well, what are you thinking?" And he said, "Well, I'm anticipating what the pitcher, what kind of, trying to figure out, analyzing what the kind of pitch the pitcher is going to throw." And I'm thinking, is it, okay, he just threw a fastball, so what's the next ball going to be? And he's trying to, you know, sort of over-analyzing things. And then he says his timing gets off. And chances are, and one thing I suggested is that if you have video, if someone, like the wife, could be sitting behind, just behind the catcher in that area, you know, the stadium or the little seats right behind the catcher, so you can get, you know, both the pitcher and the batter in the video, then and video that, then afterward they could bring the video into the office there, and you could all look at it together and maybe slow it down and see what's going on. That can be helpful in terms of having a visual part, or if they have video and they can email it to you or put it up on YouTube on their you know, just on their own channel or your channel, or just send you a link to a video. That works great too. Or they sometimes they put it on their Facebook page. You can see the video there, and that way you can see, you know, have something visual to look at. That works in well in, you know, running or you know, Dan, your Amy for your ballet, or Greg for soccer. I guess you're working with soccer. Is that right, Greg?
Soccer and baseball.
Yeah, baseball, good, yeah. And Michelle, what sports are you working with? Are you there?
Hello, Dr. Joanne. No, I'm working, trying to get some clients here in Indonesia, and it's difficult. But
oh, yeah.
I'm doing the whole networking thing. I've sent out a bunch of emails to various sports federations, and with my website and that sort of thing. So hopefully something will turn up out of it.
Yeah, that's great. And then you're going back to Canada, right? Moving back in six months or so?
Yeah, I would love to just get a few clients while I'm here just to, you know, get a little bit of practice, get my confidence up. So when I get back to Vancouver, then I think it'll be a smoother transition.
Yeah, since you mentioned you're surfing, maybe you could get a surfing client or something. I wonder if you...
Yeah, the surfing, though, is, you know, they're pretty laid back about all of that stuff here. The tennis is big. Indonesians are really good in badminton and volleyball. So, and equestrian riding is big. So that's kind of what I'm targeting right now.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So hopefully one day I'll be able to say, yes, I've got a show jumper that I'm working with.
Yeah, that's great that you're sending out the emails. And if you can offer to work with someone, a first client, you know, free of charge for a session or two, just to get your name out there, that would be great. Or just walk, you know, in your daily, you know, going to maybe high schools or colleges, talking to the coaches, that's another way. You know, that personal attention, it can be great. But anyway, so great. So I wanted to – did anyone else join us on the call that's new that hasn't spoken? I heard a ding a while back. Just wanted to check in.
Well, that was me. I got cut off and came back on.
Oh okay, great. So what one technique I wanted to give you that I used with this client is we'll call him Asher for a name, and he said, yeah, my mind's going so fast, I'm, you know, racing, and then I overthink it, and I probably my timing gets my timing off when I'm batting. And he says, I wish I could slow down my mind. I wish I could just be stupid for a moment. And I said, oh, okay, well, then we should get you some stupid pills. And he kind of laughed. And the dad absolutely loved that idea. He said, yeah, because that's so opposite of what he is. He's 146 IQ. He's so smart. Everything in his world is being smart. And he's, like, tired of being smart, being the smartest kid in the class. He just wishes he could be the opposite, be stupid for a moment. And it was kind of funny. And so we made it, because he's a kid, you know, you want to try to make things a game. So I said, okay, well, we should get you some stupid pills. And the dad said, yeah, let's see. How about, and he looked at Asher, at his son, and said, so what do you want for stupid pills? We could give you, how about Tic Tacs, or we could give you a certs, you know, mints before you go up, and you take that, pill, you know, like it's, and then you just take a deep breath and just let your mind kind of slow down, and it'll be your stupid pill. And the kid absolutely loved it, and just kind of jumped all over that idea. You know, it was funny. And obviously, we don't want him to be stupid, not thinking at all. But it was just the idea of making it a game and giving him a whole different concept than what he's used to. And so he did that for the next practice game. And he says, yeah, I went up to bat. I was going up to bat, I took a couple deep breaths. I took my stupid pill. And he went 2 for 2. So he got, you know, for two pitches, or two times up at bat, he got, you know, he hit the ball both times using his stupid pills. So it was kind of hilarious, and it was something that, you know, just came out of the conversation that we had there, that the kid came up with that idea of being stupid, and so we sort of capitalized on that. So it's an example of how you can use something that the child is saying and then and use that for use it as a technique for them. Sometimes they need something that, you know, like a Tic Tac or something that they can chew so that they realize, okay, this is something that's slow, you know, going to let my mind kind of slow down to get in the right spot. And then what happened was as they were standing up, walking out the door for the first session there, the kid noticed my medals. I have several medals from different races that are hanging on this rack. And he goes through, most people just look at the medals and say, oh, wow, that's nice, a lot of medals. But this kid, because he's very smart, he meticulously went through is analyzing every medal and was asked, well, why are these two medals the same? Well, I did the race in 2 different years. And he'd say, well, this medal here has a silicon chip in it. Because I did the Silicon Valley Marathon, they actually embedded a little silicon chip, like a computer chip, in the medal. And his dad was amazed and looked at that. He says, God, I would not have noticed that. That is amazing that you noticed that. And, you know, 20 years people have been walking through my office, no one's ever noticed that there was a silicon chip in the medal and put it together that it was the Silicon Valley Marathon. Because he's very intelligent, he notices little details like that. So I said to him, the next session, Asher, you really were noticing that. Yeah, that is amazing that you noticed that that kind of detail, that tiny little silicon chip in the metal, and then you put it together that it's the Silicon Valley Marathon, the silicon chip. You know, it shows that you are very observant and that you notice those kind of details. So, you know, how can we use that that's a real strength of yours. How can we use that in the game? And, you know, kind of pose that question to him. And he said, well, I could maybe notice, yeah, the pitcher's stance and his, his posture notice right when the ball, not anticipate what kind of pitch he's going to throw, but notice when the ball leaves his hand, you know, where the ball's going, just be more observant of that and notice his own reactions. He could notice, how fast he can react and, you know, be able to respond just at the right time for the ball. So if you can find things that the athlete does that, and, you know, bring out his strengths and then build on those strengths, I think that could be a really great way of building their confidence so that the athlete can do really well and use what they do naturally and then put it into the sporting arena. And I had him take deep breaths, of course, that can help slow down the mind and be able to, I said, you know, is there a phrase that you can use? And rather than giving him a phrase, I said, why don't you come up with a phrase that is something that you, that would be helpful for you, like, power words when you come up to bat. And he said, I'm going to say, I'm Asher the Smasher. Because, Asher, there's a lot of things that rhyme with Asher, of course. And he says, I'm going to say, I'm Asher the Smasher, because that's perfect for baseball, right? And so he was, he came up with the perfect phrase that helped him to, give a sense of his own confidence. He said that, and so we helped him develop a pre-bat routine. He didn't have one before. Ask him, what do you do when you go up to bat? He said, well, I just go up to bat. So it helped him to develop that, but used, rather than telling him what to do, I would ask him, what would be helpful for you to do going up to bat? And then we developed...
Giovanni.
Oh, is that Giovanni?
Yeah, hi. Hi, how you doing?
Hi, okay, great. Yes, but our call started at 9 o'clock an hour ago. Did you know that?
I thought that was 5 o'clock my time. Obviously, I didn't. Okay.
Sorry. Because you're in England in the UK, right?
Yeah. I checked online though. It's 9 o'clock. It's saying 5 p.m. UK. Yeah. Pacific Standard Time. You all right?
Yeah. This is
daylight savings.
Yeah, Mark. Because we changed our times. Was it a week ago? I think a week ago we changed our clocks. Yeah, to go on to daylight savings time. So it's hour.
Okay. I suppose I can catch up on the recording then, can I?
Yeah, but we're still on the call here for a little bit. So you can feel free to join us here. Yeah,
no
thanks
worries.
For joining us. Sorry about that. Yeah. I had a good private client session with Gio that we separate session this last time, and that was a good that was good to talk with you, Gio.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thanks. Yeah, just working on individual stuff, and so. But I was sharing this case study with a 10-year-old baseball player that I've been working with in terms of working with youth athletes. And I was saying that, if you can help the athlete develop a pre-race routine or pre-game routine, what they do right before they start their game or start their sequence of whatever it is they're doing, then that can be really helpful. So in this case, he said he took a couple deep breaths, would take a couple practice swings, take his stupid pills, as I mentioned, his Tic Tacs or certs, and say to himself, okay, this is my stupid pill, I'm slowing down my mind, not overthinking, and then say to himself, his power words, I'm Asher the Smasher. Just kind of get into a rhythm. He calls it the Asher Swagger, so which is kind of like just kind of moving back at plate, moving back and forth, moving his hips a little bit in the bat, getting into a rhythm, and keeping, and then just taking as you take a couple deep breaths, it's like cleaning out your mind, clearing your mind. And he said, oh, yeah, it's like it's spring. It's like spring cleaning. So he came up with the word spring cleaning, doing spring cleaning of your mind. And so he'd be a lot clearer that way. So we did all of that, and he said, you know, he would say to himself, I'm gonna wait for the ball, you know, not anticipate. I'm gonna wait for the ball, just hit whatever pitch comes. So look for the pitch, the right ball in the strike zone, and hit whatever pitch comes to me that's in the zone. So. We did that, and then he also would imagine sometimes, you know, you ask an athlete who their hero is, who their role model is. Usually athletes have a hero or a role model, someone they like, especially in their sport. And in this case, he's in the San Francisco area, so, you know, we have the San Francisco Giants here who won the World Series a couple years ago, and so Buster Posey is a really big name there, a catcher, and who's a great hitter as well. So I'd have him play videos of Buster Posey, you know, that you can find everywhere when top athletes use those videos on YouTube or anywhere, and you could play that like 5 minutes before you go to sleep at night and get into a rhythm. Be, you know, imagine that you're Buster Posey right before you go to sleep at night. And so kids have, as I was mentioning, a great imagination, much more so than adults do sometimes. So have them use that imagination to come into the to go to bed at night, and then be able to have their subconscious mind work on all of that for the next 8 hours. So yeah, so that's that was the. That was the session. I did the second session with him. I did it actually right before his game last Saturday, and so the session went well. But the kid was kind of tired. He was actually falling asleep during the session, and he had all his baseball clothes on. He was ready to go for his game, and then he left the session there, and we, you know, got his sort of whole strategy together, and then. He went off to his game, and then I got an email from the father saying the game. The first time after we had the session, he had a game and it was great. It worked fantastically. You know, he had some really good results. He had some good hits. But this game, he went to the game and I got an email back saying the game was a disaster. Asher couldn't get a hit at all. So that's where we are right now, so that's the situation that you might come up against as well, where you're thinking, oh, geez, things are going really well, and then or starting well, and then you get the child or the parent saying it's a, you know, nothing's working, we just had a disaster. So what I did was, first of all, let me ask you. If you had that situation, you get an email from the parent saying, oh, the last game was a disaster, what would you do? How would you respond? Is there anybody can jump in?
I've had this problem with homeopathy in the past where they assume that it's not working. And then when you ask questions and ask them how they think it's not working, and if you've taken a decent case from beforehand, you can bring up issues that they had talked to you about earlier, and then sometimes they'll realize that the issues that they had brought up earlier actually are no longer issues, and in fact you have been able to help them. So sometimes it's just a matter of digging a little bit deeper to find out really exactly what is going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's great, Michelle. Yeah. Anyone else have comments too? So digging deeper. As one.
Hi, Joanne, it's Amy. I would say let's identify the areas that you would like to improve from the situation, and let's come up with a strategy of how can we make that better. Let's turn this into a lesson. It didn't go how you wanted it to. That's fine. You know, we understand that. But let's figure out exactly what that means, and let's make a plan so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm just thinking, what about setting short-term goals? But sometimes we focus way too much on results, and we tend to come to a conclusion whether something's working or not working based on the end result, and that may not be a reasonable and efficient way of analyzing or understanding improvement. So maybe I would break down in small pieces or portions or objectives or goals, things that you want to achieve in order to gain the overall change, I guess, that we want to achieve.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah. Michelle, dig deeper. And Amy, you were saying, yeah, turn it into a lesson, which is great. Make a plan and, yeah, a learning experience. And then Alex, breaking it down to short-term goals, small pieces, not just the, overall results, especially in like a team sport like that. With, you can't, you might have done a great job in batting in the game, but then the team itself lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to evaluate just your effort.
Yeah.
The
I think if I could add something, I think that problem is taken care of prior to the session, based on what Alex has said. If you set up an inoculation with the client prior to commit to the process, so it's process goals and actions versus outcome, then you can never fail, because they're sticking to a long-term process, and what happens in the short term, is not failure. But if you say, if you listen to what I've got to say to you today, then tomorrow you'll play the best ever game of golf or baseball you can play. There's too many variables. You're setting yourself up for failure. So I think if it's done prior, that can never happen, can it?
Sorry, it was a little hard to hear. If you do what? What should you do?
If you get a commitment from the your student before the session, that what you're doing is a process goal and not an outcome orientated goal, it's a process, not based on the outcome of that specific day or session, then you're going to protect yourself against any type of short-term failure, which can happen because of the variables, especially, like you say, in a team sport. If that's sticking to a process, a long-term process of improvement, then if you talk about that and bring that up, I mean, we use it in golf, but we call it an inoculation. We'd use it prior to giving a golf lesson. We wouldn't just give a golf lesson and then hope for the best, because if they hit bad shots and do certain things that's going to happen in golf, they're going to go away thinking that they've not had a good golf lesson. But if you set the stage prior and agree with them, get them to agree, if we do this in this session, would that be a successful session? And they say, yes, great. If we do this process in this session, that would be accepted. That would be a great session. Then they can't come away with any type of failure.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic, Gio. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I told him in an email. We haven't had the next session yet, but just saying, what we're doing is a process, and that every game is an experience and a learning experience, and then I have a series of questions to ask them, about what was working, what didn't work. Did you, when you went up to bat, did you do your how was it with doing the pre-batting routine and that sort of thing? So, you evaluate their effort, not just the pitches, not just whether they got the ball, made the hit or struck out, but there's so many other things going on there, right? And the mental part, right? Like we went over a list of things that you can't control, and I asked him, what are things you can't control and can control? And he said, you can't control the lineup, who's batting when, what position you're going to be in, whether you're playing or not. You can't control the umpire, whether he calls strikes or balls. You can't control the weather. You can't all of those things. And then I said, well, what things can you control? And he said, well, I can control, the choice to hit the ball or to strike at it or not. I can control if I play well. He said I can control I can control my mind, my attitude, staying relaxed. I can control how hard I hit the ball. and how well behaved I am, he said, and I can control my nervousness, I can control my anger. When I get out, you know, afterward, how much that affects me if I strike out, so all those things. You made a list of things that you can control. That can help too if someone's disappointed from a bad game. You can go back and say, okay, you can't control the you know, how many points you got, but here's things that you can control, and let's work on. Work on those things. Work on your physical skills and your mental skills. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, thanks, Gio. That's great stuff. And as you said, get the client to agree that it's a process. Yeah, and that every game is a learning, that we're not just looking at outcome here. We're just looking at your process, your learning, and your effort. Well, yeah. Greg, did you have any comments? If a client like comes in and says, the dad says, oh, the last game was a disaster, what do I do?
I think we've identified that it certainly is a process, and we have to realize we're creating new habits. You know, we're uh-huh. teaching them something that they've never done before, so you have to go through the process, like you said, of a little checklist to make sure that they implemented all the rituals and the sayings and the affirmations, and make sure that they actually implemented all the tools that we or you gave them. And realize that it is a process. We're creating these new habits, and this is part of the process. Failure is nothing more than feedback. You know, so let's dig into the feedback and try and get a better result next time. And Barry, and identify what you can and can't control, because you know who knows what the variables were as to why it was a performance that he wasn't really happy with. You know, there's who knows. So. But just to move forward, let it go, and do better next time.
Yeah, because part of it was they said that this time he'd be facing a tougher team than they've ever played before, and the pitcher would be this pitcher's known to have a really fast pitch, a faster pitch than he's used to, or maybe a faster pitch than he's seen before. So it's a brand new situation.
Right.
And so in that case. If it's a brand new situation, you can't expect to be perfect the first time, right?
If his skill doesn't match the challenge, then it's not going to be an experience, you know, that he's going to enjoy. But that's how you improve your skills is face higher challenges. You know, it's a process, like we talked about. You know, you go in and out of flow, if you will. You know, and we do that by continuously challenging ourselves. That's why we like to call ourselves athletes. You know, we love that raising of the bar and accomplishment, you know. And sometimes, you know, you're not going to always get the result that you're looking for, but the question becomes, did you make progress? You know, and we try and focus on what progress we do make, and then, okay, well, what's the next challenge? And just, it's a cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And for this kid, and for a lot of your kids that you probably work with, he tends to be really overcritical of himself. And like, for instance, in the session, like if you get a chance to have a dad or a parent there, especially that first session, I think it's important to have I'll often have the parent there with the child. Oftentimes the whole session, or sometimes the parent, you know, if it's clear that now we have a relationship, then I'll see them there for part of the session, then the parent will leave and just go out and read or go for a walk and then come back. But if you can see the parent and the child there, at least that first session, then you see the dynamics between the parent and the child. And every time the parent would compliment the child there and say, God, Ashley, you did great that last practice game. You went for 2 for 2, and you got 2 hits. And the Asher would say, but the first one wasn't very good. I really messed up. And then same thing with the next compliment would be the same kind of way of him saying, yeah, you were doing really good the way you focused. He said, yeah, but I lost my focus. That wasn't really good. So he would constantly be putting himself down. So that's one challenge to work on is you know, being able to, if you get good feedback from someone else, accept that feedback and realize that maybe sometimes your thinking might not be in alignment with what, with reality, with if you, that you are making good progress, you know. Right, and be able to say, you know, teach the child to be able to give himself those power words, which are like self-compliments, saying to yourself, hey, it's okay, I can do this. So, so that's great, Greg, yeah, talking about creating new habits and making the asking, did you make progress, and go through a checklist of things that you're teaching them and see, did they, maybe they implemented some things and didn't implement others, or maybe they implemented them at the beginning of the game, but when they got tired or frustrated, they didn't implement them at the end of the game. So then you can work on that part, you know, how to keep them going. Sometimes it can be a nutrition kind of thing, too, that they're just tired, you know, they need some sports drink or some kind of, you know, make sure they're eating something during, in the dugout and drinking enough to make sure they're getting in enough calories and hydration so their brain can be thinking well. Sometimes it might be this kid was falling asleep practically in our session beforehand, and then he was going right to the game. So you wonder, you know, what kind of energy, if he's falling asleep in our session before the game, what kind of energy was he having during the game? Maybe he needed a nap. He didn't get enough sleep the night before. It could be those kinds of things, too, that you want to help the parent and the child get into the right rhythm, make sure they get enough sleep the night before. And he says, you know, the child said he has trouble sleeping the night before games. So that's another thing you can help with, create a relaxation visualization, some sleeping techniques for them, and to not have, you know, sometimes kids have cookies before they go to bed or something sweet, and that's one of the, especially for a child with ADD or hyperactivity, that's one of the worst possible things. Is to have sweet things right before you go to bed because it's going to rev them up. So you could teach them simple, even if you're not a nutritionist, just some simple nutritional ideas to, you know, have just have water, a piece of fruit before you go to bed, not anything sweet, so that it promotes relaxation. So so those are some kind of helpful techniques. Near the end here of our session, and we'll have our next one. They're always, you know, on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month at 9 a.m. And Gio, you can set your clock or or just double check on what time. Yeah, the right time. Now that we've got daylight savings time here, sorry about that. does anyone have any progress to share? Oh, hi, Gio.
Sorry, I got bumped off. I don't know what happened. Apologies.
Oh, it's okay. So I was just saying our next sessions will be the next second Thursday in April. Why don't we go around and just, if you can share what you thought was the most, a little nugget that you thought was helpful during this call today, and or any thing you want to share about clients that you're working with? Anyone can jump in.
I liked the keywords you suggested on the website to help drive more traffic to the website. I have thought of some of those, but some of the other ones I think will be really helpful.
Good, like sports parents and high school.
Right.
High school athletes, and then listing the particular sports that you work with.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could go, you know, if you're working with running, you could say running psychology. If it's baseball, put baseball psychology or golf psychology. That kind of thing is really helpful. Yeah. Okay. Other things that were helpful for you for this call? You guys?
I guess that's to value the process of the highly imagination kids have coming into the session, use that to our and their advantage.
Yeah, that's great. Kids come up with amazing things, and you can learn a lot from them. They can be our teachers as well as us being theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers, yeah. Okay, great. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, the good imagination and creativity that they have. And so, and if you can build on that and make it a game in any way, make your techniques into a game, then kids love games and love having fun.
Yeah. And also thank you for all the input for the softball player. It's very useful. I appreciate it.
Yeah, good for your girl. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, let us know how it goes. Yeah. Anyone else, Michelle or Amy or Gio, anything that's particularly helpful for this session to sort of emphasize for everyone?
I like the creativity.
Well, go ahead, Amy.
I like the creativity with the kids because I tend to work with younger kids sometimes, and I think you do have to approach it in a slightly different way and come up with clever ideas like the stupid pill. I think that's really helpful, and it, you know, they gravitate towards you. They end up having fun.
Yeah, exactly. So if you can pick up on something they said and then make it into a technique or a game, build on the ideas they already have, make it fun, make something funny, that's great. So, yeah, great, Amy. Gio or Michelle?
I guess for myself, I like to be reminded to get into the right side of the brain, which you did at the beginning, and that's just your more creative and positive side. And so when we're doing our coaching, it's good to remind yourself of that. And also just towards the end, when you were talking about it being a process and looking for the feedback and not focusing on achieving the result, if you don't achieve the result immediately, don't look at that as a failure. Just see that as, you know, it's a process and we're making steps towards achieving those goals. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, feedback. Yeah, I thought that was really helpful. Yeah, and Greg, thanks for that. Yeah, that failure is nothing more than feedback. And oftentimes we usually learn much more from our failures than we do our successes. So, be hungry for that sort of thing. Like a kid, you could tell them you're a detective, you know. But let's play detective in our session here and find out, what's the problem and what's the solution, and let's put on our thinking caps here and make them part of the process too, that it doesn't have to be just you coming up with the solutions, because it's much better if they can come up with them. So play detective would be a good way to make it into a game. I mean, kids almost universally are into video games these days. So if you can relate it to this kid is the one I'm working with is like addicted to them. So if you can ask them what video game they're playing and maybe what strategies they use there and try to use those skills in their baseball game here, then that can help and make it relevant for what they are already doing. Yeah, Gio, was there something helpful? I know you came in the last part.
To be fair, I didn't really get anything. I said I heard something and didn't get anything. Obviously, I came on too late and didn't really get too much. I was quite surprised, I must say, that you're working with athletes that young, but then having lived in the States, I'm not surprised that these parents want to get their young kids the edge in an extremely competitive sector. So, yeah, it's a good surprise, I suppose, because it opens up the market hugely for us as coaches and performance, coaches. So, yeah, no, that was interesting for me.
Yeah, this kid is going to a private school, and it's a school where you have to test to get into it. So only the very smartest kids, they're tested on an academic basis, so you only the smartest kids can get into this particular school. And so and then they have a lot of funding for sports. So if you can if you can work in the private schools, oftentimes the parents have more funds available to hire you, and they're they have the resources for hiring different kinds of coaches, and they are really interested. Oftentimes they're just highly involved with their kids and just really love working with them and want the very best for their kids. So that's a good place to look for kids that want, and those are the kinds of parents that are looking online, searching for you, searching for, psychology and mental training and help. And they often look at the, they put in for my, psychology Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area for me, to find people in this area. So make sure that you put your city or your the area you're in on your website and put that on every one of your articles, so that parents know when they're searching for your area, they want to find someone local there that they can work with. But it doesn't necessarily, you don't have to be local. Like I was saying, I worked with a 10-year-old kid that was in Fresno that's 4 or 5 hours away from me, and just worked by phone, too, because they didn't have anybody in that area that they could go to. So it can work just fine by phone. You don't have to be confined to your certain area either. So that can work great, too. So, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And so our next call will be the second Tuesday. I don't have the date right with me, but second Thursday of April. Does anyone have a calendar in front of them? What day is that?
That'd be April 10th.
April 10th.
That's
right. Yeah, 5 days in the States, 5 days before tax day. So we can hopefully we're all working on our taxes. fun. but that'll be great. I really value your input and your I know that this your time is important, and these are fantastic discussions we're having, I think, and it's great to have such a wonderful community of coaches here where we can all support each other. So and if you have suggestions for topics that you'd like us to discuss, for our next calls, or if you have a particular client you want to discuss, email it to me, and we can, I'm always responsive to your requests and things that you want to talk about as well. And with the level two, I'm finishing up the website area for the certification level two, this next level course that I'll be teaching. So I was just a little bit of a delay in getting the website set up for that. So I'll send out more information, and that should be done by next week. So any of you that would like to take that, I'll send you more information about it. It's great, just advanced training and more information on both coaching and marketing and business. So, this is great. So hope you got all are interested in working with kids as well as adults, and because they're fantastic to work with in all different sports, and there's a real need for you out there as coaches to work with kids at any level. I mean, 10 years old, I always thought, God, that's awfully young too, like Gio, like you were saying, but they're not too young. They're actually, just at a really good age to learn. I mean, the younger the kids are, the more they're like a sponge, the more they just take all this stuff in. So it's a fantastic age to have a really good impact on them. And basically, parents want to, like this kid was, the parent was saying, I don't care if he goes to the major leagues. That would be great, but it doesn't, I just want my child to be happy and to learn from this experience. So if you can provide a good learning experience for them, then you'll get a really happy client, and they'll be referring more clients to you. And that can happen really, really quickly, really easily. So, so thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll talk to you on our next call. And feel free to send me an email with any questions you have. All right, thanks. Okay, bye now.
Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, have a good day. Bye.